タラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタタララタラタラタラタタ。
Hello and welcome. I'm Helen.
And I'm Caroline.
And we love to sew. This is a podcast for makers where we talk about sewing a handmade wardrobe and bring you interviews with inspiring creatives and small business owners in our community.
Today we have Erin Dollar on the show. Erin is the designer and maker behind Cotton and Flax, a collection of handmade textile home goods. We chat with Erin about surface pattern design, screen printing, and sustainability as a creative entrepreneur.
And how she does everything herself.
Seriously. Hello, Erin. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to chat with you guys.
We are also very excited to chat with you. To start us off, can you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. My name's Erin Dollar, and I run a textile home decor business called Cotton and Flax. I'm down in San Diego, California, and I have a little studio that's sort of a makeshift textile factory. I buy fabrics raw, and then I do all the silkscreen printing for every product myself. So it's like a one-woman print factory where I'm just sort of individually by the piece printing these different patterned fabrics and then sewing them into tea towels, making some coasters, throw pillows, all sorts of things for just sort of a beautiful minimalist home. And recently, I've been sort of stretching my surface pattern design muscle by working with a company called Robert Kaufman to design yardage of fabric for their company. So that got released last year. My first collection with them was called Arroyo. And I was super excited to see how quilters and garment sewers were going to take this fabric and make it their own. It's a lot of the patterns that you might recognize from the Cotton and Flax collections that I've released in the past, but sort of scaled down for craft quilting and fashion design stuff. So it's been really fun to see that kind of take on a life of its own. So yeah, I guess in a nutshell, printer, textile designer, surface pattern designer, lover of sewing, but maybe not the most talented sewer that you guys have ever had on your podcast. I'm kind of coming at it from a different angle for sure.
Yeah, that's the reason why we were so excited to have you on, is because you do have a bit of a different angle, and we haven't really had a chance to talk to somebody who does primarily surface design and also like home decor items and stuff like that. And I love hearing that you produce all of that stuff yourself. That's very impressive.
Yeah, man, it is a huge challenge. You guys are actually catching me about 30 minutes after I'd got home from my physical therapy appointment, which I've had to do a lot this year because the printing has just taken a toll on my back. It's one of those things where it's a really physical process. I'm sure a lot of your listeners can kind of relate, because I know that sewing, you're spending a lot of time sitting or maybe leaning over a cutting table. And, you know, that stuff really takes a toll on your body if you do it all the time. And I think it's been one of the most interesting things this year, where I'm kind of realizing, okay, I got to kind of figure out the right balance in terms of balancing the kind of physical production side of my work with the design and kind of more artistic side of my work that I really want to do more of. But of course, you know, it's tough to get everything done. And then, you know, I always think everything is going to take less time than it does.
Oh, yeah. We feel you there.
Anyone who's crafty at all is like, yeah, that sounds about right.
My new rule is just to take whatever time I think it's going to take and double it, because that seems to work really well.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you.
I mean, it's true that our crafting can definitely take a toll on our bodies. So it's always good to take breaks and get up and move around and, you know, get surfaces that are at the right height for you. I think that really makes a huge difference. And if you do need to go to physical therapy or get massages and stuff like that, definitely do it. It's not a luxury, right? This is your health we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. And that was like one of the funniest things, where I think in my mind, you know, I started Cotton and Flax, my textile business, about 5-ish years ago. As I'm saying that, I'm like, is that right? I don't that feels like so long ago, but it also feels like it's passed in a minute. But yeah, I think when I started it, you know, I was in my mid-20s. I kind of had this idea of like, yeah, this is great. I'll just do this forever. And it'll, you know, I'll never want to do anything differently. And I'll always have the energy to do this level of work. And, you know, it's been really humbling in the last year to kind of really assess, okay, I'm in my 30s now. I need to kind of make sure that I'm taking good care of myself and not burning out in terms of my creative side of my business, but also just realizing if I want to keep doing the level of kind of production of making these beautiful handmade home goods at the level that I want to do it, where I'm selling to, you know, stores like West Elm or CB2, or, you know, even just the smaller indie boutiques that I work with on a regular basis. It's that sort of, how do I keep up with that level of production and making everything by hand and really using my skills to make something that's really beautiful and high quality while not destroying my body in the process. It's been humbling. It's been interesting to kind of think about, how do I find the right partners? How do I find sewists to work with? How do I maybe delegate some of this work so that I'm able to kind of continue, you know, in the long run?
That is so interesting that you're having this dilemma. And I think probably a lot of makers out there who are looking to grow their handmade business are in the same position as you, kind of trying to figure out how they can find that balance. And I'm looking forward to seeing how you figure it out and work it out this year and find a little bit more balance.
Yeah, me too. It's a work in progress for sure.
So I would love to know a little bit more about your journey up until Cotton and Flax. How did you get to the point where you were ready to start your business?
You know, I didn't really discover surface pattern design until after I finished my college degree. So I went to UC Santa Cruz and I studied fine art, which was so much fun. Oh my gosh. I really just completely found my creative voice in the printmaking studio there. It was something where I was taking a lot of drawing classes and, you know, photography and kind of trying out all of these different types of things. And I always kind of knew that I was going to go in this creative direction, but I wasn't really sure what that was going to look like. And when I stumbled upon printmaking, it was just, whoa, like a door opened in my mind. It was like, oh, okay, well, I guess this is what I'm doing forever now because this is fantastic. And it really kind of opened something up in my mind. And I think that when I was in school, I wasn't really focused on thinking about kind of running a creative business. It was more creating fine art for art's sake and kind of developing my style and thinking about the kind of more aesthetic stuff rather than how I was going to make a living. And then when I graduated, I moved back to Portland, Oregon, which is where I grew up. And the creative community there is really incredible. It was a strange time to move back. It was 2008. So I'm sure you guys remember it was the middle of the beginning, actually, of the financial crisis. And jobs in my field just seemed like they were kind of drying up. They were already kind of slim pickings in Portland, which is a super creative city. And it's very competitive for jobs at museums and galleries and the types of places that I was interested in working. And, you know, this was also right around the time when Etsy and things like Renegade Craft Fair were really starting to take hold. And I thought, you know, I have these extra prints that I made during college. Why don't I put them up on Etsy and see how they do? And, you know, maybe go to one of these craft fairs. There was one called Crafty Wonderland, which I think is actually still happening up in Portland every year. I decided I'll just take some of my prints to this and see if I can sell them and kind of help to bridge the gap between my little side hustles of, you know, random part-time jobs that I was able to find. And, you know, I kind of dipped a toe in that creative entrepreneurship really early out of necessity in some ways, that sort of feeling of, well, I'm not making enough money. I kind of have these creative works just sitting here in a drawer. Why don't I try and sell them and see if people are interested? And, you know, luckily I got really great response from that. And so it was something where I thought, okay, I'm getting this encouragement. I have some friends who are running a cooperative print studio, you know, not too far from my house. Why don't I go back to that and kind of start producing new work and selling it? And that can be kind of a supplementary income for me. And I did that for about 2-3 years. And then all of a sudden I was working a lot in the studio with a friend of mine who was really interested in quilting. And I just was like blown away by the things she was making. I was like, this is so cool. I knew how to sew at that point. My mom had taught me how to sew when I was a teenager. And so I was just like, you know, this is really cool. Why don't we print on some fabric and like see what that looks like? We can integrate it into our quilts that we're making and, you know, we'll just sort of see what we can do. And so At that point, I was sort of teaching myself how to silkscreen print. And I decided just to print some really basic sort of abstract patterny designs onto some fabric for her. And it looked really cool. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to take one of these panels. I'm going to sew it into a pillow. And, you know, I made a few of these and I brought them to those craft fairs that I was doing. And they got a great response. And I was really excited about it. It's a more sort of utilitarian use of my creativity, right? Where it's sort of, you're still producing maybe something that's artistic and you're printing in the same way that I would produce my fine artworks, but it's something that someone will actually use. It's sitting on their couch, it's sitting on their bed. It's kind of providing that softness, that comfort, also that just sort of stylish thing that helps them feel like they're communicating part of their personality in their home. And so it kind of tapped into this other area of interest for me that was sort of more focused on design and maybe textile production and all these things that were kind of bubbling up in terms of things I was getting more and more interested in. And, you know, I decided, I think at some point I just thought, there's something here. I really kind of want to see where this is going to go. And I actually worked with that friend who was the quilter friend, and we kind of brainstormed names for my business. And she actually helped me think of the name Cotton and Flax, which is really rooted in the materials of what I was printing on at that time, cotton and flax being the plant that you get linen fiber from. So that was sort of the beginning, the kind of like groundwork for what I've built today, which is, you know, both a online retail and wholesale business. And my work is carried in over 150 stores.
Wow. It's such an amazing journey. I love hearing about your background in fine arts and how when you started out, you were just doing it for art's sake and then sort of stumbling into the possibility of a business and trying a few things out and letting that creative process really guide you instead of trying to necessarily nail down exactly what it was, you know, really exploring and working with other people and trying a few different things and seeing what sticks. I'm really curious about your actual print design process and how, you know, going from a paper medium to a fabric medium and dealing with repeats on fabric and stuff like that. Were your prints initially maybe not necessarily like repeated patterns, but more landscapes or like...
Yeah. I totally know what you're saying.
Okay.
You know what? It's funny because I think because I didn't have that training as a surface pattern designer initially, I really kind of thought of it, yeah, more as an artist. I was thinking, ooh, let's just draw some interesting shapes or patterns or even, you know, I think in the beginning, I was sort of doing kind of more pictorial stuff. The work that I make for Cotton and Flax now is much more abstract and sort of really minimalist. But at first I was really experimenting with like really dense coverage of patterns. And of course, like I wasn't thinking in repeat at that point. I wasn't thinking, oh, I need to make it so that I can print it over and over again and make really large pieces of fabric. I was just printing 15 by 15 panels of fabric to sew into a pillow. So I didn't necessarily mean to think in repeat. I could do just a general motif that I really liked the layout and then sew it into a pillow and call it a day. Now my design process is really different because I need to think about, you know, especially when I'm working on fabric yardage projects, I need to kind of think about, oh, people might make something really large with this fabric or they might be making, you know, a tiny coin purse. So I really need to kind of factor in a lot more into the kind of scale of my work for projects like that. But, you know, it was sort of the hardest part was just learning to physically print on a different surface. Printing on paper is so much easier than printing on fabric. It's, you know, it's flat. Even if you're using kind of nicer, you know, cotton or handmade papers, it's like the texture of paper is going to be so much smoother than any fabric that you're going to print on. It makes it so much more challenging as soon as you get that woven or knitted texture to start printing on it. It kind of just presents all these different problems and getting the fabric to stick to the surface while you're printing and not wiggle a little bit and ruin the print. It's, you know, just the technical side really was challenging for me for a long time, which is probably why I think I started moving towards more simple designs. I think it was easier for me to print designs that were a little bit bolder, a little bit heavier line weight. I had better results printing those. And I think that in, you know, in the same way that I was sort of following my interest going from, you know, a fine artist to a printmaker to a, you know, a textile printer, I was sort of following what was working as I learned and got better at printing on fabric. I'm like, oh, okay, this is getting better results. I'll move my designs more towards that. And it, you know, it was kind of interesting how that developed. I wonder if I had been professionally trained as a silkscreen fabric printer, if I maybe would have chosen other designs at first, or if my design style would have evolved differently.
We love your designs so much. So I'm actually personally glad that your process turned out that way, because I think that your simple, kind of clean Scandinavian style designs are just so, so beautiful. I love the modern aesthetic that you have. I'm curious about the difference between designing screen printed patterns for your handmade goods versus designing for Robert Kaufman. Mm. Are you doing the Robert Kaufman designs directly onto your computer, or are you like scanning in prints?
So most of my designs start the same way. I really like to work by hand. And so I'm taking Sumi ink, this really rich black ink, and just drawing directly on paper with either a pen or with a brush. And that's how every single design for Cotton and Flax has started. Either that, or I've done some designs have started as block prints, where I carve a piece of linoleum and create a repeat print motif with that. And so for me, it's really about that tactile part of the process. I really like designing individual kind of imperfect motifs that can kind of combine to create a really interesting sense of movement or scale. And I think that that to me is what really separates my designs from a lot of people's work that's designed on a computer and has the really crisp edges and maybe looks a little bit more standardized. I think what makes mine different is that you can kind of tell that it's done by hand. You know, the print quality is really high and the opacity is really beautiful and rich on the fabric, of the quality of the ink is really lovely. But you can tell that there's something that's just a little bit weird. I don't know if that's the best way to put it, but it's, you know, I think all of my motifs, I really try to not get too far or just trying to perfect everything or smooth every edge. I think that what makes them special is that they're hand designed. And so, you know, just to go through the basic process, I draw the motifs, I'll scan them just using a flatbed scanner. I'll bring them into Photoshop or Illustrator and kind of work on the layout, maybe kind of fine tune placement of the different motifs, scale it down if I need to, which is often the case when I'm designing for Robert Kaufman, because quilting fabrics or fabrics that are going to be used for apparel tend to need a little bit smaller print for production. When I'm printing for Cotton and Flax, I tend to have it a little bit bigger, which is kind of just a luxury that I'm able to, you know, print those at any size that I want. And I think that I like the bigger motifs. It is more impactful. It's kind of more, you know, I think that when you buy maybe a pillow at a big box store, it's like, it's sort of the most marketable sort of standard motifs. You're going to see a lot of stripes. You're going to see a lot of maybe floral prints. And I like that I'm able to make these sort of large, wonky prints that you're maybe not seeing too many other places. That's kind of why I like to keep them at that larger scale. But then, you know, taking it from the computer, I'll then have a transparency made and use the transparency with a photochemical process to make a screen so I can repeat print the pattern over and over again. And you'd have to ask Robert Kaufman how they do their production, because, man, that is a mystery to me. I think it's essentially similar to what I do, but on a much larger scale. So, and they're obviously dealing with printing and repeat, which is not something, and still not something that I really worry about as much, because I'm still printing individual panels of fabric for my Cotton and Flax products.
Right. So for your Cotton and Flax products, you're doing pillows and napkins, right?
Pillows, napkins, tea towels. Right now, the tea towels and the coasters are just, they've been my best sellers for quite a while. But it's been interesting, especially now that the fabric line came out last year. It's been really interesting to start to kind of maybe think about, okay, do we want to do a collection of quilts? Do we want to do a collection of bags? You know, especially totes. People have been asking me for bags for like since day one. And it's been something that I've kind of dithered on, because to be quite honest, like my sewing skills are just not good enough to produce really high quality bags that I would have a good enough profit margin on to make a living. And that would be something where, you know, maybe I would sew a sample and then work with, you know, I've worked in the past with a team of sewers in Los Angeles who have been amazing to help me with large wholesale orders. Anytime that I have, you know, a lot of production to get through and I don't want to, like I was saying before, destroy my back in the process, I like to partner with these sewists who are, you know, in a more factory environment in Los Angeles to kind of crank through a bunch of these products at once. And then I can focus more on the screen printing side, or I can focus on the, you know, sort of finishing and packaging side. And obviously all the fulfillment is something I'm still doing myself. So, you know, that's something for large orders. I'm able to kind of rope in some helpers, which is great.
Wow. I am so impressed that you do all of these things yourself, and including the sewing. I mean, you're sewing.
It's insanity.
I mean, I know you mentioned you use these people in LA once in a while, but so right now, other than that, you're sewing all of your own pillows and napkins and tea towels and all of that yourself?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. It's funny because I love it, but it's also sort of a logistical nightmare because, you know, especially now that I'm sort of healing from this back injury, it's sort of, it's hard for me to know, okay, am I going to feel okay, you know, for a weekday to be able to sit for the amount of time that I'll need to sit at the sewing machine to complete these projects? Am I going to be able to, you know, get this done on the deadlines that my retail store clients are really going to need to be able to get this stuff into the shop? And I think that that's been really eye-opening for me, trying to think about, okay, not only, you know, just developing my own sewing skills so that I can make more complicated products, but also figuring out that balance of kind of what is sustainable for me, knowing that I really do want to have a hand in the production. I don't want to completely outsource everything and just be sort of a manager. You know, the reason I got into all of this is my love of handmade home goods and my love of, you know, creating things by hand. And so I don't really want to let that go. I don't want to just make that someone else's responsibility and just be the sort of person who's doing quality control. That didn't appeal to me at all. So yeah, having to strike that balance between sort of what is sustainable for me long-term has been really interesting, especially this year. But, you know, I think it does make it special. I think that's the thing is, you know, you might not be able to tell the difference between a tea towel that I sewed or someone from the group that I work with in LA sewed. But, you know, I think knowing that I have my eye on sustainable sort of ethical production, I think matters to my customers. They really want to know that it's not, you know, made overseas by a company that maybe isn't using ethical business practices, that isn't providing safe conditions for their workers. I think that this stuff is really important for the people who I'm marketing to. I think, you know, it's something that matters to them.
Yeah, I think it's great that you value that and that you're thinking about how you can approach it with those values in mind. And I mean, something that comes to mind for me is just, you know, if you were to say hire somebody to come into your studio and work with you and do that sewing side of things to give your back a break and still, you know, I feel like you can still embody those values because that person, you know, is going to be living in your city and is going to be fulfilling maybe their dream of being a part of a creative community. And that handmade feel is still going to be there because it's still made by hand. It's just not made by you, right?
Oh, absolutely. And that's definitely something I've experimented with. The reason I've started to work with the production house in LA is they're just much better set up for textile production. They do all sorts of fashion production and home decor production already, and they have all the specialized tools. And, you know, I think that that to me was the comfort of knowing I don't need to train these folks. They know what they're doing. They are really pros at this stuff. And, you know, the idea of, am I going to be the best teacher for someone to come in and, you know, even if they're already good at sewing and kind of know what they're doing, is it better for me to just find the people who are already set up or to try to build that out in my own studio? And I think considering the overhead and kind of all of that, I think the reason I chose to work with other people who were already set up was just that it was one less thing that was on my ledger, right? When it comes to like running the business, I would much rather make investments in, you know, if I'm going to hire, I think I would rather do hiring with fulfillment or maybe with somebody who can help me with PR and marketing rather than hiring somebody who's going to need physical space in my studio, because that's a whole other issue. Studio space in California is expensive. Oh my God.
Vancouver too. I can totally relate to that. And yeah, that makes a lot of sense that you would outsource that part of it to some place that is a little bit more set up for it, especially if you're working in a small space. And I'm excited to talk about your studio soon. I did want to ask you though, can you tell us a little bit more about your fabric sourcing process? Because I know since you're doing things on a smaller scale, I mean, it can be hard to source fabrics with lower minimums, especially if you're looking at that more natural, sustainable angle. So how have you managed to find the quality fabrics that you're using? And what has that process been like for you?
For me, this is actually an important part of the story of how I kind of started working on surface pattern design. You know, I was actually buying fabric from Robert Kaufman initially for my business. And so I was already somewhat in touch with them, even, you know, it was just people in the sales department. I wasn't talking with anybody in the art department at that point. But, you know, knowing the quality of their fabrics and knowing that printing quality that I was getting, silkscreen printing on Essex, was beautiful, that really kind of made me feel more confident in approaching them to do an overprinted collection on Essex. That was really, I was able to kind of approach them from the perspective of, I'm already doing this and I'm seeing a demand for this type of product. So I wonder if maybe you want to take it to the next level. So, you know, that was the sort of interesting thing is like, if I hadn't been sourcing fabrics from them initially, that connection might not have been the person that I went to for my first surface pattern design collection. But, you know, to get back to your initial question, I think that for folks who are interested in running businesses like mine, the best place to go and like look for raw textiles, if you want to do screen printing or if you want to just buy fabric to produce your own goods, is a textile show. There's at least one annual textile show in Los Angeles where you can go and kind of peruse all the different manufacturers who set up booths, who have samples, and you can kind of touch everything and see what their minimums are and get a sense of what works best for you. But if you're, you know, not able to go to a show like that, you can look online. You can kind of, you know, I know Robert Kaufman at least has a page where they outline their wholesale terms and you can kind of get a sense of, okay, am I going to need to spend a certain amount to get this set up? Am I going to need to get a business license that I can show them? Am I going to need to get a resale license and kind of work through all the different things that you need to do to get set up? But really, it's just sort of patience and looking at all the different things that are available, getting samples, sewing with them, printing with them, seeing how they hold up, doing wash tests, all of that, and then making a decision from there. I think, you know, that's been so interesting too. As I've grown my business, I get a lot of emails and inquiries from people who are interested in starting kind of similar ventures. And they always are like, where do you get fabric? How do you get this? It's, you know, I'm happy to share some of my sources, but at the same time, I don't want to spoil that exploration and sort of experimentation that's really crucial to develop your own collection. I think if they just sort of took my list of suppliers and bought all the same fabrics and started producing on them, you don't really learn about what works best for your process. And so I think that's such a crucial part of it, is just trying out different things and seeing what resonates with you and what you gravitate towards.
I do think that that process is so important. And yeah. I'm glad you mentioned the LA Textile Show, because I was actually just there last week. Sourcing for, yeah, I know, it's funny. I was sourcing fabrics for my own online fabric shop. So that was really fun. And if there are any listeners out there interested in starting a fabric shop or starting their own company or, you know, a little indie shop selling handmade goods, going to a fabric sourcing trade show is definitely the way to go. I completely agree with you there, Erin.
Yeah.
And it was so fun to see all the different suppliers. Robert Kaufman was there as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, you can really discover all the different possibilities and make your own decisions. And I have people email me asking for advice on starting a shop. I also encourage them to go to a trade show, because I think it just opens up your eyes to the industry. And it's a really great opportunity to make a lot of connections all at once.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And there's nothing like seeing that stuff in person. I know it's intimidating, especially if you're coming from somewhere where, you know, luckily for me, if I want to drive back up to LA, I can do that in 2 hours. And, you know, I actually started this business in LA. I had moved from Portland to Los Angeles and, you know, I lived in LA for 6 years and that was really where I got my footing with this business. And so in a lot of ways, having all of those resources in the same city was completely invaluable to being able to build it up to what it's become. I think it is challenging to say, oh, you know, I live in Iowa and I'm going to need to take a flight and, like, you know, get a hotel and do all this stuff to be able to come to a show like that. But really, in a lot of ways, you're going to be saving yourself some time. You're going to get that hands-on, you know, time with fabrics and kind of seeing what's drawing your eye, kind of what you're gravitating towards, instead of kind of emailing and getting samples and, you know, doing the onboarding for every different company. It'll be a lot less time spent on that part of the process. So even if it seems overwhelming, I would say, yeah, definitely encourage people to do it.
Oh, absolutely. And I met up with a couple gals down there and they were just in for the day. So you don't necessarily have to, you know, book a hotel and stay overnight. You can just pack it all into one day. It'll be a long day, but I think it's 100% worth it to do that. So I wanted to also ask you, because you mentioned Essex, and for our listeners out there who might not be familiar with what Essex is, that is one of the substrates from Robert Kaufman. Is that a linen cotton blend?
It's a linen cotton blend, thus cotton and flax. You guys are starting to put it together.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's, you know, that was the first place that I really started, was printing tea towels and printing pillows. And I was always using cotton linen blend because I love linen. Oh God, linen's the best, but oh my God, is it wrinkly? So it's that sort of finding that nice blend so that you can get that beautiful yarn dyed quality of the linen with the combination of the softness and the slightly more wrinkle resistance of the cotton. And so that for me was the substrate that I printed on for the first, 3 years. I still print on Essex. That's something that I use for the napkins and the tea towels. So, you know, it's just been my go-to. It's such a beautiful fabric. I love that it gets softer with use. As you wash it, it softens up and gets really nice and absorbent. It's, you know, it's just such a wonderful fabric. And it takes the ink when I'm screen printing. It just looks beautiful. I think that flax-colored yarn-dyed Essex is my go-to, because I think that both the white and the black inks that I use just pop off of the surface of that. It's so lovely.
Well, that's great to know. And I love that the Robert Kaufman fabrics are available in retail stores as well, because if we have any listeners that are interested in just experimenting with their own making process and maybe trying out some fabric screen printing on their own just for fun, it's great to know that there's a quality fabric out there that they can use that you recommend, you know?
Yes, so absolutely.
That's awesome to know.
Absolutely.
I'm curious to know, at the beginning of the interview, you mentioned that your products are for the minimalist home. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to know a little bit more about that. Are you yourself a minimalist?
So I try to be. This is the thing about minimalism, right? Is I think, you know, the core sort of things that I think are the biggest ethical sort of components of my business, right, are minimalism and sustainability. I think that those two are really making up the core of what I want to try to achieve in building a product-based business. And when I say minimalism, I don't mean like living with nothing. Obviously, I'm selling a product, so it's something that you're, you know, adding to your home. But when I say minimalism, I mean something that fits with a lot of different styles of decor, something that isn't so trendy that it's going to be out of style in a year and you'll have to throw it away or give it away. Something that is using high quality materials so it won't wear very quickly, even if you have it in a really high traffic area of your home, like your sofa, and you're sitting with it every night. It's something that, you know, is going to last for more than a few seasons because it's made with quality materials and sewn with care. So for me, minimalism is more about buying less, buying things that last, buying things that resonate with your style and really speak to your aesthetic point of view, and buying, you know, things that are going to last and, you know, that you won't have to replace. I think that that's sort of the sort of sustainable tie to minimalism that's really drawing me in my design process. I think that by keeping my prints really minimal, like just one color on fabric, you know, I think that that makes them accessible to a lot of different types of decor and a lot of different style situations, if that makes sense. Plus, I just think, you know, we live in this world that's so focused on consuming and the sort of, okay, well, you know, I'm feeling a certain way. I need to buy this to comfort myself or to fill this void or to make me a better person or to make me more whatever. And I think that, you know, when I'm creating my work, I really don't want to feel like I have to use that style of marketing and selling my work. It just felt so, you know, I didn't want to have to work with people in the sense of, oh, well, your house is less than I, you know, you need to buy this product to really make your house better and more stylish or more cool. I really wanted to provide something that would both be utilitarian and beautiful. I didn't want to have to use those sort of marketing tricks to get people to buy my work. And so having it rooted in the sort of sustainability, comfort at home, products that are going to last and stay beautiful. I think that that's really, really a big important part of what I'm doing here.
I love that you're touching on sustainability here because it's a good segue. We wanted to ask you about your studio because we read on your blog that you are working on making a no-waste studio, and we definitely want to hear a little bit more about your space. So can you tell us about your studio and a little bit more about that sustainability angle?
Yes, absolutely. So my studio is not very glamorous at the moment. It's a fourth floor walk-up in a big sort of warehouse space. I have about 150 square feet to call my own. And it's, you know, it's a shared building. It's got a lot of other people's studio spaces. We have next door to me is a fine artist who's a painter primarily. There's a photographer at the end of the hall. There's a graphic designer across the hall from me and a woodworker who's on the opposite side of the hall. And so it's really a vibrant, interesting kind of creative home for me. But it does, I do have the ability to kind of close my door, work on projects undisturbed, listen to my podcast, you know, really kind of dig into my work in an uninterrupted way, which is great. But the no waste studio thing has been really important to me as I've learned more about waste within the textile industry in general. I think that that was something that was really upsetting when I kind of dug into more research about kind of the way that our clothes are produced in terms of mass production, the ways that dyes pollute our environment. And, you know, just thinking about how can I, in building a creative business, how can I make choices to have as little of an impact as possible on the environment? And for me, that means choosing non-toxic water-based inks that don't require chemicals to set them. It means choosing sustainable natural fabrics that aren't used, you don't use petroleum products in the creation of these fabrics. So that's great. It means doing small batch production and not creating so many products that I can't sell through them and have to throw them away or give them away. It means thinking about making cutting decisions in a way that I'm not creating a lot of waste fabric. And when I do have scraps, saving them for other projects, you know, so kind of thinking about all the different ways that I can reduce waste, think about using rags instead of paper products to clean up, all of these different things. It's thinking about the waterways, thinking about the trash that I'm producing, recycling, and just choosing more natural supplies in the first place so that I'm not supporting industries that are creating more toxic chemicals, because there's definitely ways to produce silkscreen prints that are using more chemicals that is a more plastic or petroleum-based process. So I'm really kind of trying to lean away from that, if that makes sense.
I like your approach. I think it's a good way to get started if you're a little intimidated about sustainability, is just to look at your lifestyle and your process and look at everything that you do and see if there's a choice that you can make there, if there's another option, right? And slowly you start to build up a more sustainable environment.
Oh, absolutely. And no waste is the goal, right? But that isn't where I'm at yet. I'm low waste at this point, but it's that sort of thinking with each new collection, with each day in the studio, what can I be doing to just do a little bit less in terms of my contribution to, you know, the landfill. I'm really trying to kind of look at every piece of what I'm producing and what I'm throwing away and thinking, is there really no other use for that? Do I really need to create this piece of waste? And what can I do to maybe reduce that each time? So yeah, it's a learning process for me and I'm not perfect, but I'm, you know, that's been the aim and really trying to be open and public about that process, because I think it's something that a lot of businesses don't talk about. And I'd like to see more people even if they're not aiming for perfection, to really just try to do a little bit. Because if everybody did a little bit, it would make a huge difference. So, yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Every little bit counts. And I do think it's difficult sometimes as a business to open up about that because you feel like you're going to open yourself up to criticism or, you know, judgment. But I totally agree with you that just opening up the conversation and being a little bit more open-minded and allowing people in is a really good step in the right direction. So I commend you for that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's not a very sexy subject, but I know it's, you know, one of those things where I think if we're really thinking about the future of design and production, and, you know, so much has changed just in the last couple of decades. I think people's interest in eco-friendly goods has sort of gone up and gone down. And, you know, I think it's just something that I really want to kind of keep a focus on because I don't want it to become, you know, just another trend that we get over. You know, I think it's something we need to, as a society, start to address in a bigger way.
I was watching an Australian documentary called War on Waste, and it was really good. They had a whole episode about fabric waste and, well, mostly like clothing waste and the amounts that actually go into landfill. It is very, it's shocking. Yeah,
it really is. And you know, what's interesting to me too is just that so much of just the process of how things are made is really still hidden from public view. And I think, you know, there was a lot of outcry when we've seen very public, horrible, you know, things like the Rana Plaza disaster with the fire that happened there. And, you know, this sort of idea of like, okay, who is really making our clothes? Are they safe? Are we keeping them safe? Are we protecting the individuals who are responsible for this type of work? That's the ultimate in sustainability, right? It's, you know, trashing the environment is one thing, but letting people be horribly injured or killed in the line of work of making clothes or making home goods, that's a horrible thing to think about. It's really important for us to focus on sustainability, both in terms of human life and the environment as well. It's, you know, it's not just about kind of the trash that we're making. It's also how are we treating the people who are in this line of work?
Yeah, it's absolutely important to look at all of these things and just face them and try to figure out how we can move forward and do everything that we can to be better just across the board. So yeah, I love that you are open about this topic. It's great.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Okay, let's switch gears. I would love to talk about your classes because you do some pattern surface design classes, right? Or screen printing classes?
Yeah, so I love teaching. It's something that I try to carve out time for every year and really offer sort of people a glimpse into my creative process or teach people printmaking, different printmaking techniques so that they can go and print on their own fabric and create products for themselves. It's something that I haven't had as much time lately to do. Usually my classes are either focused on block printing, so carving an original design into a linoleum block and then using ink to print onto textiles or paper. And those classes are so much fun. And it's such a great way for me to kind of get invigorated again about like seeing the kind of enthusiasm and excitement of my students kind of makes it fresh for me as well. So it's something that I like to do, but I haven't been able to do as much in the last year. For those of you who are interested in learning more about silkscreen printing, I do have an online class available through Creative Live. So I don't know if you guys have ever done any online classes with them, but they have a really fun model where it's sort of, you know, you pay one time and then you can just have anytime access and go and at your own pace learn a new skill. And a couple of years now, I taught a just intro to silkscreen class where you learn all the different materials you need, how to get set up, how to create a design with silkscreen printing in mind, and just the sort of process of getting your artworks onto paper or fabric. So that might be a good one for folks to check out if they want to make some customized or personalized fabric for different sewing projects or if they just want to try something new. It's good to stretch that creative muscle.
Yeah, I think the block printing is such a great way to get started with this medium because it is so simple. And I can remember when I was a kid, we did a lot of potato block printing where we just used potatoes. And my sister and I would just print on paper and stuff like that. And it was so much fun. So if anyone's interested, I would recommend definitely, you know, just grabbing a potato and carving something out and some paint and printing on something.
Oh my gosh. And you know, I have really I have really simple tutorials for block printing on my blog, on the Cotton and Flax blog. So you could give that a Google and get started there too. You know, that is something that I love too, because it's so immediate. It's like, you can go from like, oh, what, I want to make like a triangle printed fabric, but I want it to look really like this. And, you know, I don't see it in any stores. I'll just make it. And you can, you know, in a couple of hours, on some just basic quilting cotton with, you know, a small piece, you could take a rubber eraser and carve it, and, you know, buy a little bit of ink and have your own custom fabric in like an afternoon. It's such a cool thing to be able to create something that no one else has. That's such a fun thing to be able to integrate into, you know, quilting or into fashion design or whatever you want to use it for. Or you just hang it on the wall. Like, make your own cool wall textile. Why not?
Yeah, that's so true. It's a great idea. I'm wondering, like, for your students or even for yourself in your design process, I feel like this can be a little intimidating and hard to sort of make decisions about where you're going to put the blocks or where you're going to, you know, put the repeats and stuff. Like, how do you gain the confidence to just know that it's right? Or how do you not over design? Tell us a little bit about that.
I mean, so there are some basic sort of layouts. When you start to learn about surface pattern design, you kind of learn, okay, you can kind of do the traditional sort of block or brick layout, or, you know, a half drop where you're kind of alternating, you know, a little bit over to the left or right between each design, or, you know, you can kind of, or you can do just like a crazy random all over print. So there's definitely some, you know, basic categories that I tend to stick within when I'm designing for new products or just experimenting. But honestly, like, I think what's kind of cool about block printing is that it looks imperfect, is that you can kind of do some like slight alterations by rotating a block or just moving it a little millimeter to the left or right. And it just makes your design feel so much more interesting and has that really great movement and that kind of handmade look. So really, especially in my classes where people are trying this for the first time, I really encourage people, like, just pick a really simple design and don't sweat it. Like, just go for it. And, you know, if you don't like it, you can always, like, you know, add a second motif or build on that original design and try and add in different pattern bits until you like the way it looks. It's really, you know, kind of a low pressure situation, especially when you're in that experimental phase.
I like that you say it's low pressure. I'm imagining it and I'm like, I get anxiety about where to put things sometimes.
This is the thing, is I feel like there are no real emergencies in printmaking, right? It's like, what's the worst? Well, the only real thing that can happen is you cut your finger while you're carving the block. So that's the only one to really watch out for. That's, you know, it's funny. If you get anxiety in the design process, I get anxiety like teaching people how to use sharp tools. I'm like, y'all know how to use an X-Acto, right? Right? Okay.
Oh my gosh. So how do you know when the print is like done? Do you ever find that it's hard to stop?
Yeah. Especially because I'm known for more minimalist prints. I think sometimes I have to kind of go, okay, it's that, like, is that a Chanel quote? It's like, okay, get dressed and then remove one thing, right? It's like, it's just the sort of like,
yeah.
I always feel like in my design process, I add a little bit more than I need. And then it's a question of subtraction rather than adding more. And for me, I think it's helpful to kind of hold a new design next to some older successful designs and say, how do these sit together? You know, could these potentially be displayed together or, you know, sit next to each other as two pillows on a sofa? I think that for me is kind of the continuity in design is really important, because I don't tend to retire products very often. A lot of designs are kept in the collection for 2, sometimes 3, 4 years. And so it's important that they kind of all sit together well and look cohesive. It's kind of more of a fine art question, right? It's like, it's the same as, how do you know when a painting is done? It's like, you know, you just kind of like feel it. Something in your bones is like, yeah, that's time to set that down. Or sometimes there's a deadline and you're like, well, these are the colors that are in front of me. And so this is what I'm submitting. Running a business like this, there's so many different moving parts that, for better or for worse, my design process isn't as flexible as it was when I was first starting out. And now I need to be efficient and I need to be able to say, okay, you know, I have a week to design for the spring collection and I really need to finish it by then. So at the end of the week, what I've got is what I've got. So,
well, that's really good advice. And I'm sure it comes with time and experience as well. I think when you're a beginner at anything, you tend to get really excited and overwhelmed and just kind of do a lot all at once. And then over time, you learn to pull back a little bit and you have a little bit more perspective. So,
well, this is like such a true thing for artists and crafters too, right? Where if you look back at the things that you made, you know, just a few years ago, it's kind of like horrifying, right? You're like, oh God, that was so amateurish. I really didn't know what I was doing. Or, you know, like that's just the reality of creative work, right? Is it you build on your skills as you practice, as you get more experience. And it's true for sewing, it's true for printmaking, it's true for making artworks. It's, you know, all of those creative skills are built through time and practice. And so it's sort of a matter of if you are so paralyzed by, oh, I have to make every print perfect, it's like you'll never finish anything and you'll never move forward to that next second design and third design and fourth design. That's really where the confidence comes from, is just, it's so cheesy, but you just do it.
It's so true. Can we talk a little bit about your sewing journey? Because you've mentioned it a few times on the podcast. So I'm really interested to know more about how you learned to sew and also moving forward. Are you hoping to sew your own clothes in the future? Are you wanting to build on your skills in that way as well?
So this is like my dark, deep, dark secret, right? Is that I am not that talented of a sewer. If you look at the things that I make for cotton and flax, they're mostly rectangles. It's like everything is like kind of the most simplified version of those different products. I'm not somebody who really, I don't feel very comfortable tooting my own horn in terms of my sewing skills. It's something that I know that the quality of the products that I'm producing are really high because I've practiced those products a million times. When it comes to doing garment sewing, it's a disaster. I am so, so lacking in the specific skills when it comes to sewing a curve or thinking about drape or, you know, all of these different skills that you gain as somebody who's making apparel. It's like, I just don't have that skill set yet. And it's something that I really wish that I had more time to cultivate those skills, but it just hasn't been a priority in the last few years. It's one of those things where it's, you know, if I had unlimited hours in the day, yes, I would have that all handmade wardrobe and it would all be with my own patterns and it would look so cool. I can see it in my mind. But yeah, it's just, y'all have the most amazing set of skills. And I think it probably is a little blasé to you guys because you're just like, oh, I just made this week. It's fine. It's no big deal. I will feel great if I make one piece of clothing a year. And that's like, wow, Erin, good job. You did it.
I mean, but good job. You did it, right? Like everyone's got their own pace.
I know. I have this poor Wixton tank that has been sitting in my sewing pile for, oh my God, it's probably like a year and a half. Oh, it's been a really long time. And it's not, that's like an afternoon project for most people. And I'm just like, well, I don't know. It's too difficult.
You've got a lot going on. It's okay that your sewing is taking a backseat, given what you're already accomplishing for your business. It's not a surprise. But I am curious to know, like with designing for Robert Kaufman and putting out these fabric collections, were you expecting garment sewers to take to them? Or was your intention more for people to use them for quilting?
That was actually a huge surprise to kind of see the different range of projects that people are making with the fabric. That's been such... Honestly, that brings me so much joy just to see these things pop up on Instagram every few days. It's like, oh, look what I just made with hashtag a royal fabric. And I'm completely beside myself seeing some of these things because they're really incredible. It has been probably a stronger demographic of quilters and people who are making more craft projects with the fabric. And I think some of that is a product of just the weight of the fabric and the fact that the linen is maybe a little bit... I don't know. I mean, maybe you guys can tell me. My experience has been that garment sewers for fashion don't necessarily gravitate towards the Essex because it's a little bit heavier, or maybe it has a drape that isn't necessarily suitable for all types of apparel. But it's been really interesting to see the folks who are using it for creating clothing.
Just from what I've seen online, it looks like it would be suitable more for like a jacket or maybe a pair of shorts or something like that, or a skirt, but not so much like a blouse or a drapier dress.
Mm-hmm. But for beginners, I mean, we talk about this all the time, the beauty of using those more structured fabrics as a beginner if you want to make a woven tank top or a boxy kind of top. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think it can work beautifully. And those styles are so in style, especially here on the West Coast. I mean, everyone's wearing that kind of boxy look now.
Yeah. And also the beauty of linen is that it softens as you wash it, right? So it might feel a little bit crisp and structured to begin with, but as you wear it and wash it, it's going to soften and it's going to get this beautiful quality to it. So yeah, I mean, I'm definitely going to get some of your fabrics and experiment with them now, because I love your prints.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I get so thrilled when I see people sewing clothing with it, because that's something that it's like the biggest goal on my to-do list for 2018 is to make some clothing with Arroyo, but I just have not been able to get over my intimidation for this process. But the thing that I have loved seeing especially is folks are using that Hills and Valleys print. It's this sort of abstract sort of U shapes that repeat. And some have said it looks a little bit suggestive, maybe female anatomy. And I won't deny that there is some influence there. But it has been so cool to see people making jumpsuits with this fabric. And I'm just like, I love these women who are taking this really bold print and making literally like the largest garment possible, like covering their top and bottom in this amazing print. And it's just so cool. I can't even tell you how jazzed I am about that. So it's on the to-do list. I have some fabrics set aside for when I finally am able to kind of carve out time to make. I'm hoping to make a few summer tanks with Arroyo. I think that'd be cool.
I'm going to try to dig up some pictures on Instagram of some of the garments that people have made out of your fabrics and put them in the show notes so that our listeners can see.
The hashtag is so fun to explore. I've just been, like anytime I check up on what people are making, it's like, oh, this is so neat. So many creative people. I love it.
So you mentioned in your email to us, actually, that 2018 is your year of connecting with the creative community in a deeper way. And I absolutely loved that sentiment. So can you tell us a little bit more about what you mean by that?
Yeah. So I think, you know, we're living in sort of a funny time with social media and kind of this feeling of maybe overexposure in some parts of our lives. I think I've really struggled with how to connect with my audience and connect with other creative people without feeling like I need to be maybe chained to my phone, if that makes sense. I talk a lot about sustainability in my business, and that kind of has another component to it, which is like sustainability in terms of my sanity and my protecting kind of my quiet time and my privacy as just a person outside of my business. And so that's been something I really struggled with, as social media has been maybe rightly or wrongly held up as like, you have to be really engaged on here to be able to grow your business and grow your brand and, you know, check in with your followers a few times a day, put yourself on stories, be talking to everyone. And it's just something that I haven't felt super comfortable with. And I've been thinking a lot more about, okay, well, if I don't want to be plugged into my phone all the time, if I don't want to be, you know, that sort of on-air personality on social media all the time, what are some other ways that I can reach out to the creative community and just make that connection? And one of the things that I've really loved is having conversations like this, like the kind of longer form, digging into kind of what's important, what matters to us and our sewing community, what's kind of on the horizon in terms of design things that are coming down the pipeline, collaboration, talking about kind of how I'm inspired and humbled by everybody that I'm seeing working in this industry. And I like that I have the opportunity to maybe talk with you guys who are, you know, you're coming at it from a different angle. I get to hear a little bit about your perspective on this stuff. And it kind of feels a little bit holistically maybe better suited for my personality than kind of engaging on the community level on social media. It's a strange distinction because I'm definitely still putting myself out there, I guess. But it's, yeah, I think that stuff like this really intrigues me more because there's more of the direct back and forth, or I can hear, you know, as your listeners maybe mention on social media or over email, oh, I heard your episode. This really resonated with me. It feels like a more genuine connection maybe than those one-off posts that I'm throwing up, which, you know, I try to be mindful about those too and really provide interesting and thoughtful content there. But yeah, there's nothing like a actual conversation, right?
It's so true. And we've been finding that the podcast has given us a platform for those more genuine connections. And I've been a little quieter on my Helen's Closet social media since starting the podcast. And I think it's just, you have to recognize your own limitations with putting yourself out there. And if you're, you know, doing one thing, then maybe that means you don't do so much of another thing, and that's okay. And sometimes I also take social media days off and I don't do it for a whole day. Is that crazy?
I love that. Yes, I need to get there. I'm working on it. My big thing this year is just like thinking about it as less of a hustle and more of like, how do I actually make those real connections? How do I actually build something that's meaningful and feels really worthwhile and has longevity? I think that stuff is so important to me. And in year 5 or 6 or whatever I'm in at this point, you know, I think as you get further down the line with a business, you start to think, okay, I know maybe what my folks are interested in terms of products for cotton and flax, but how can I start a bigger conversation about minimalism or sustainability or design or slow design or sewing or, you know, all of this stuff that I think touches on what I'm doing with cotton and flax. And yeah, and I think I learn more about what's important in through these conversations too. So yeah, I hope it's interesting to other people too.
I'm sure it will be. I think everyone can relate on a certain level. And there's been so much great stuff in this episode. So we were really happy to have you on.
So what can we expect for cotton and flax this year? Do you have any new products coming out or anything?
Yeah. So I'm going to have some fresh things in the shop in about a month or so in mid-April. That's going to be really fun. It's going to be some new pillows that I've been working on and developing and taking photos of and like making sure they look really great next to the ones that are already in the shop. So I'll be releasing those pretty soon. And then in the late summer, I'm, you know, really excited to talk about this, but I can't reveal too much. There's going to be a new fabric line that's coming out through Robert Kaufman in August. So that's going to be something I'm really excited to debut. And, you know, I've been kind of releasing peaks of what people have been making with my last fabric collection with Arroyo. And as I get closer to the launch of my second collection, I'll be developing samples with that fabric. And, you know, if people have ideas for collaborations or, you know, sewists who really want to get involved in kind of creating something special with this new collection, I really want to hear from them. So yeah, let me know if you guys have ideas.
That is so exciting. We can't wait to see your new releases. If our listeners want to get in touch with you or find you online, where can they find you?
So on social media, I'm pretty much always at Cotton and Flax, CotonAndFlax. And online, you can find me at cottonandflax.com. And, you know, you'll be able to find contact info there if you want to pop over an email or send me a DM on Instagram. I check those pretty frequently.
Amazing. Erin, thank you so much for coming on the show today. We had so much fun talking with you. And good luck this year. Sounds like you have an exciting year ahead of you.
Yeah, thanks so much, y'all. Stretch your backs.
Yeah. Okay, bye.
Bye. Da-da.
That's it for today's episode of Love to Sew. You can find me, Helen, at helenscloset.ca and Caroline at blackbirdfabrics.com.
We're recording today in gloomy Vancouver, Canada, and you can get links for everything we talked about in this episode at lovetosewpodcast.com.
And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. We love reading your reviews, you guys. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search Love to Sew.
Send us your questions about sewing at lovetosewpodcast.com/question. Or better yet, leave us a voicemail at 1-844-SEW-WHAT. That's 1-844-739-9428.
Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Hello and welcome. I'm Helen.
And I'm Caroline.
And we love to sew. This is a podcast for makers. Oh my God, what's happening to my voice?
You're croaking it out there.
Croaking.